At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
Podcast Father here. Join me on my journey as I start out as the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the Podcast Father.
Holy hell, I can't believe we've made it to another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. Mike Zago's with me.
We're doing it again.
We're still doing it. It never stops. That sounds crazy. Oh, okay. But yeah, anyway.
It never stops.
Mike's so parched, he's drinking out of the dog water bowl.
It's true. It's been very hot, but I took a water break and now we're ready to rock. I'm feeling hydrated and invigorated, and everyone should stay that way.
Do you have like a sink right by your desk? Because I literally could hear you like pouring the water.
It's pretty close. One bedroom apartment. What are you going to do? Studio is next to the kitchen. Open concept. You know what I mean? It's trendy.
God, I'd like to be a fly on the wall. Actually, I would not like to be. I'm sure your neighbors hear all your conversations with yourself.
The flies on the wall get swatted, first of all. And I hope they do hear it. They would be getting free entertainment and not having to listen to my advertisements. So I guess that's good.
Fair enough. So today we're going to talk about Complicit Pod. I actually had an interview with Caitlin and Hillary. This podcast is a really good one that hits home, and I'm emotionally invested in this case. It is about the disappearance of Lauren DiMollo.
This one is so interesting to me because of the closeness of the topic. There's a personal interest in the case, and not that I'm necessarily against other crime pods or anything, but like anything in life, I'm more intrigued when people's personal feelings and thoughts and opinions are kind of forced into the spotlight. That's why I like having artists and stuff on my podcast, because you get a genuine feeling for the source of the emotion. And this resonates with me in the same way, because there's a real connection to what's happening here.
Yeah, there is. And there's actually, like you said, you're right. There is a connection, because they actually know Lauren's sister. And I think that makes them very emotionally involved in this, understandably.
It feels more raw. It feels more real. And rather than just some podcasts can have a way of just sounding like a list of facts sometimes, which isn't necessarily bad, but this one just has something more emotionally connected.
I feel like it's my duty. I'm trying to do my part also to help with this investigation, not just talk to Hillary and Caitlin because they're created something amazing as far as this podcast, but also highlight this case because it's been over a year and it needs to be solved. The twists and turns and all the different things we're going to talk about in this interview will be really interesting. I mean, I promise you, you'll enjoy it.
It's going to be good. I would talk more about it because I think it's really cool. But if you want to hear more from me, just go listen to my podcast. Let's get into this one.
Yep, let's get into it. But Mike, man, before we do, I got to take care of my business, man.
Mm-hmm.
Myself and this podcast are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. Make sure you're checking out Quite the Thing Media. Go to quitethethingmedia.com. If you want to go to my personal site, it's actually at Quite the Thing Media. quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather. There you can request to be on this podcast as a guest. Also, a review from me on site. Make sure you're checking out all the great original podcasts on site and the independent creators on site. quitethethingmedia.com. Couldn't do this podcast without the hosting platform, Captivate FM. Captivate FM is great, guys. I can't tell you how great it is. I could talk about it all day, but I will tell you one thing. For me, as a new podcaster, it's amazing. There's all sorts of tools, growth labs, etc. The team is so hands-on at Captivate FM, they will help you through your journey. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you want to distribute your stuff, go to CaptivateFM.com. They'll go ahead and give you 7 free days off the bat, but I'll tell you what, if you go to my Quite the Thing Media page, quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather, there at the bottom, you'll find an affiliate link. You can get 30 days of Captivate FM free. Why wouldn't you check it out? Captivate FM. This podcast is sponsored by Good Pods, my great friends at Good Pods. This is an amazing app, guys. You get on there, you see what podcast your friends and influencers are listening to. Download the Good Pods app. All the music on this podcast is from the artist Young Karts. Young Karts, great independent artist. You got to check out all the work. Go to the site, youngkartsbeats.com. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at @podcast_father, or the podcast actually has an account too, at @indie_podcaster, or good old fashioned email, always great too, thepodcastfather@gmail.com. You want to support this podcast? One great way you can do for me is you can go on your favorite podcast listening platform, may that be an Apple or Good Pods, and give me a rating. Throw me a 5-star. Type some nice things to me. If you don't even want to type, don't worry about it. Just throw me some stars. Any feedback is appreciated. I really do appreciate it. If you want to get real crazy and support me, you can always buy me a coffee. Check it out on my Quite the Thing media page. That's enough for the business. Let's get to the view. I'm very excited today to talk to Caitlin and Hillary of Complicit Podcast. I will go ahead and give you both a few minutes to introduce yourself and talk about the podcast.
Okay. Well, I'm Caitlin. I'm the voice you hear the most narrating our podcast.
Even though they both sound the exact same. So you got
We have very similar voices, which is going to be tricky for your listeners. Sorry. So this one right here is...
Hello, I'm Hillary. You don't hear me as much, but I tend to write more of the script for Complicit because, as you'll probably find out in this interview, I'm much better at sitting down and writing than I am at speaking.
Yeah, so Complicit is a podcast that is a serialized single case. We follow the still unsolved, completely mysterious disappearance of a young woman named Lauren DiMolo. In short, she was living in Cape Coral, Florida, went out looking for jobs one day, and the next day was never seen or heard from again. Of course, there's the usual suspects. There's a boyfriend, there's some other shady characters, but so far nothing has turned up her whereabouts or any kind of clues as to what might have happened to her. So our podcast follows the story basically from before she went missing and the events leading up to, and all the events that have occurred since. And we have a pretty cool connection with the family. So we get a lot of insider information and a lot of background and insight into Lauren's life and the lives of those she was closest to. So it's kind of like a more in-depth look than the average journalist or news story could cover.
I agree. And I think that's what makes it cool. No, go ahead. Sorry. I just want to throw that in there. That's actually what makes it, you guys can tell that you do have that connection with the people you're interviewing and, you know, hanging in, that you're with.
Yeah, it was, this is Hillary. It was, the family put a lot of trust in us to tell the story. And we really tried to make it as impartial as we could, given the sources that we had to work with. And a lot of people have even contacted us about the case. Like Caitlin just said, we know Lindsay, who is a voice you'll hear on the podcast, who is Lauren, the missing woman's half-sister. And we saw her Facebook post one day that her sister was missing, and we were like, whoa. So we, you know, contacted her, said, what's going on? We weren't anywhere near her, but, you know, just tried to offer support, and we followed the case. And when things started kind of getting more mysterious, like evidence appearing where people had searched before, and more details started coming out about what had been going on in her life in the month prior to her disappearance, we were just sort of intrigued and / wanted to help, but it's COVID. We couldn't get down and help the family in person. And we had obviously listened, like everyone else probably in the world or definitely in true crime, to Serial, and knew how powerful a podcast could be for evergreen content. It's not like you have to catch it when it's running on the news and people could discover it at any point. Hopefully the right people who might have some kind of tip they weren't even aware of, you know, that could be helpful to the case. But in general, it's an intriguing story that I think people really have connected to, you know, and we've had quite a lot of downloads in a short time. You know, the case itself, today is the 1-year anniversary, or between today and tomorrow, depending on when you think she went missing. But we only really launched the story for the world podcast-wise in early February, which is, we launched on Missing Persons Day as a nod to her, February 3rd. And it's been crazy that, you know, we've had access to all of the information, and her family's been wonderful throughout. And her father, Paul, and we've never met, you know, we only know Lindsay. We've never met these other people. And so they put a lot of trust in us. But her father, Paul, one of the first things he said to us was, I want to make Lauren a household name. I want everyone to know her story. I want to find her. And if we keep putting pressure on the police through the media, through podcasting, whatever it is, then it can only help. So that's been our mission the whole time. Yes, to tell the story, but to get out there in other forms, go on other shows or, you know, whatever it is, and help their goal of making Lauren a household name.
And it really is a great podcast. And of course, an intriguing story that we want resolution for. And it makes for a great listen. So I just think it's crazy that you just saw the post and that's how it all started. So once you got the ball rolling on it, as far as I know, there's some association with production company and all that. How did that go about? Was it just like a pitch or?
We wrote it. We asked the family if this is something they'd be interested in. They said, of course. Most of them had never, they were like, what's a podcast? And so, you know, it was like, yeah. Well, it's very powerful. And here's, you know, the ultimate example is Serial. And this case was reopened, went to the Supreme Court, you know, the whole thing. And at that point too, you know, any media is great coverage, but they knew we would be impartial, if that's a good word. We really only wanted to present the facts of the case as told to us. And there's a lot that has been told to us that has never made it into the podcast because we couldn't corroborate it. So we're not just relying on what people have told us. Like if it is in the podcast, we have been able to back it up somehow. That was important to us and to them because I think pretty quickly a few other media outlets had jumped on the case for entertainment purposes. And they got really, you know, discouraged because there was some victim shaming of Lauren going on because of her past. And, you know, so they were a little wary because, you know, Lindsay could vouch for us. It was a little easier for us. And our intentions were not media entertainment. We have no background in media entertainment at all. This is the first time we're ever doing something like this. We're consumers of, you know, of content, of all types of podcasts. And so we were familiar with the medium. It also seemed like this is going to sound terrible, but a lower barrier to entry where, sure, you find a production company and we write everything, we narrate everything, we do everything, we buy all our music, or the production company that we hired, who's Resonate Recordings, they're wonderful. They have their library and they have their, you know, engineers that put it all together for us. And we do as much behind the scenes before it gets to them as possible. We have a lawyer review every single word. It is a scripted podcast. So there was not really a pitch involved. It's just us doing it.
Yeah. Shout out to Adam, our engineer, who puts those episodes together so amazingly and takes every note we have and makes all the changes 80 times over. We love him so much. I don't know. But yeah, as far as getting into the podcasting, and once we had the idea and the story, I mean, like Hillary just said, we definitely knew how to write it and how to tell the story, but we did not know the first thing about putting a podcast together. So Hillary did all the research into the production companies of podcasts that would be able to do all the things we needed. And Resonate also happens to produce some of our favorite true crime podcasts. So we knew we would have a good run with them. Like she said, they've been amazing. And that's kind of how it all happened. But yeah, we didn't have to pitch it. We basically just had to say, we would like this podcast to happen and we would like to hire you. And they were like, okay, thank you very much for your business. Let's do this.
Point being, you both had this creative vision and came up with all this without indulging too much information on your past. What is it that you normally do in your day-to-day lives for career?
So Caitlin here I'm an elementary school teacher. So that's why I do most of the narrating. I've got a good reading voice. I practice every day with young children. But yeah, and also the good news about my teaching schedule is it does allow me a lot of time. I mean, my day's over. I'm home by 3:30 every afternoon. So I have the whole afternoon to work on things. And obviously every holiday, long summers, you know, all the vacation time to dive into stuff. So that's my actual career. This is my new side hustle, it turns out.
And Hillary here, I am a marketing consultant. So I have a lot of I'm not going to say free time at all, but I have a more flexible schedule. So that's why, like Caitlin said, she does a lot of the talking. I can do the writing at night or, you know, whenever. So why I'm more the one on Twitter and, you know, figuring out how to get the show in front of people. And I'm sort of tapping into my marketing background on that.
So you've known each other for a while.
Yeah, we grew up together, actually. It's how we know Lindsay. She was, you know, one of our friends growing. She's a little younger, but we grew up together. But then everyone went their separate ways for college. You lose touch, you know, you keep in touch on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I guess I don't have a Facebook. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Just... Social media.
Of course.
And old-fashioned telephone calls and text messaging. We do more of that than social mediaing these days because we're in constant contact all the time for this.
Yeah. But over COVID, when this was all happening, it was still COVID. So, you know, you're not going to an office every day. You're at home more. I never on Facebook just was so random that I happened to be and saw Lindsay's post desperately asking for help of people if they had seen her sister on June 19th, 2020.
I'm not surprised that you knew each other before. It kind of resonates and probably makes it a little bit easier to be able to do this kind of work together. Just to get into the story a little bit, because I'm a true crime lover myself, I've never been to this location. Set the scene of this city and how it is. I know you do that pretty good in episode one, but you've made the comment that it can be known as a rough area.
Right. Yeah. So Cape Coral, Florida is on the west coast of Florida. It is on the surface, from first glance, a beautiful Florida town with an endless maze of canals, lots of boat. And like the way Lindsay describes in the podcast, there's so much water flowing around and throughout Cape Coral, Florida, that sometimes a street gets broken by a canal and you're trying to find an address and you're on the right street, but there's water in your way and you have to like go all the way around to get back to wherever you're supposed to try to find. So it's pretty much secluded from the way it's been described. Neither of us have physically been there. So our description, if anyone is in Cape Coral listening and we're off a little bit, sorry. But the way it's been described is it's pretty secluded. And once you're there, it has everything you need. They have a saying there called keep it in the Cape. So they want you to take care of all your business there, your eating, your entertainment, your shopping. Though it looks beautiful and there are areas with million-dollar homes along the water and people's, you know, large, beautiful yachts. There's also, like everywhere in the world, almost, I like to use the term, the seedy underbelly of Cape Coral. There's a very, very, very heavy drug presence in the area. We actually just spoke with a reporter the other day who we asked, what's like the main crime in Cape Coral? And she said, oh, definitely drugs. Like when we report breaking news, it's very often drug dealing, drug trafficking. The area does definitely have that going on. And along with drugs usually comes crime of other sorts. And I mean, I don't want to speculate, but I assume, you know, you don't want to be hanging out in an area with a bunch of people on drugs because this is like meth and fentanyl and those kinds of things don't leave a person acting and looking very normal, so to speak. So I think that Cape Coral is a nice split between really nice, beautiful area and super sketchy, drug trafficky, scary people area.
Did you get the impression that it was the type of place, you know, everybody knows everybody, still like a, not like a huge city, maybe a still small town vibes?
Yes. From what we understand, it's a really tiny community in Florida. And it seems like most of the people are very familiar with each other. I mean, just as an example, Lauren, the missing girl, did not drive. And when they went out searching for her, people were like, oh yeah, I don't know her, but I ride the bus with her every day when she's going to work. Or, oh yeah, we see Lauren at the park meditating. So people in the area who weren't necessarily friends with Lauren definitely knew of her, recognized her. So yeah, it's definitely like that small community vibe.
Which makes this all much more, it shouldn't be as complicated, but it almost makes it more complicated, right? Because definitely somebody knows something. So that's a good way to paint the picture of this location. It's still that small town vibe. Somebody probably knows what's going on. But I do want to talk about the day that she disappeared or the day or two. It's 18th or 19th of June last year, that's kind of up for debate. But just talk about, you know, quickly about that, not, you know, quickly, but in your own time, that timeline. And there's some different things that are said about it.
Yeah, it's it's Hillary here. If you talk to her sister, Cassie, for example, Cassie is 100% sure she disappeared on the 18th. It's the last time she spoke with her. Paul, her father, feels the same way. Her boyfriend says he kissed her goodbye the morning of the 19th. It was a Friday and he left for work. So he's saying, nope, she was alive. I kissed her goodbye on the morning of the 19th. There's a maintenance worker in the area who says, oh, I saw her around 10 o'clock. We, you know, she was walking back in the direction towards her apartment from the park. So he says she was alive. There's another guy who's about a mile away who said, oh, sorry, the maintenance worker was around 8:30. There's another guy about a mile away who said, nope, I saw her around 10 o'clock. We waved. She was walking by my apartment. So, it, you know, there are three uncorroborated witnesses who independently each say they saw her the morning of the Friday, June 19th, 2020. And on the 18th, the prior day, Thursday, there's her sister who spoke with her. There are phone records. There are phone pings. There are Facebook posts by her. Anything that can be corroborated by technology and not just somebody's word. There's surveillance video of her. I mean, all of that. Anything that can be corroborated by technology happens on the 18th, and there's none of that on the 19th. And
which is huge.
Which is huge. So that's where it's up for debate, because the timing is a little strange. We named the show Complicit because of all of the people, like you said, someone knows something. There's clearly people who aren't talking who know and are at the very minimum complicit in her disappearance, whether they're responsible directly or not. And they're, I mean, in our opinion, you know, they're equally to blame at this point, especially 1 year later, exactly today, a year later. So on the 19th, technology-wise, there is exactly one ping from Lauren's phone, which was only a Wi-Fi usable phone. She didn't have a data plan, and it was pinged in her apartment from her Wi-Fi. So we know that's accurate. And it was a Facebook Messenger call from her phone to her boyfriend, Gabby's phone. It was an unanswered call. He says he never got it. It's in her phone as an outgoing call that was unanswered. And it's the only, there's nothing else. And that was at 10 o'clock. So the issue, you know, that immediately then puts into question the witness who says he saw her at 10 o'clock, a mile away from her apartment. She could have been there. Does that mean someone was using her phone? Just there's a lot of debate and issues around her whereabouts on the 19th. The 18th, everyone's very clear about where she was.
Did she typically use her phone in the morning hours?
Apparently, she was never without her phone. So, yeah, I mean, and even she would take it to the park. I guess they had Wi-Fi. There's free Wi-Fi all over Cape Coral that she would just tap into. So even on the buses had, you know, saw her surveillance cameras and Wi-Fi, and she was applying for jobs and all of that. All of that could be corroborated. But yeah, typically, from what we understand, she was never without her phone. And her phone was located in her apartment.
This is a tricky part, right? Because,
right.
I remember. I've listened
to this. Let me qualify this. She disappeared sometime 18th or 19th. That was a Thursday, Friday. There was some drama around filing a missing persons report. Eventually was filed by her boyfriend, Gabby. And then the following Tuesday, her sister, Cassie, and Lindsay, our friend, with Lindsay's boyfriend at the time, now fiance, went to Lauren's apartment to go see for themselves what was going on. It was, you know, a couple hour drive for each of them. And when they were there, Gabby, who had previously given up his keys to that apartment, showed up wanting to get his television off the wall and handed them Lauren's phone. So it's unclear if he showed up with it and, you know, it was off or whatever and not pinging, or if it was in the apartment and they had missed it when they went in to look. But he went in the apartment, came out and handed Lauren's phone over to them.
But the strange part is, like you said earlier, she's not known to leave without her phone. No different than us,
anyone?
Right? Yeah.
Well, the other strange thing is that, so she disappeared, like we said, either the Thursday or Friday. On Saturday at the park, that was very, very two blocks away from her apartment. At the park, her purse, her shoes, and her keys were found on like a little picnic bench table area. And in her purse was her wallet and just identifying things that it was, you know, nothing. It's unclear if anything had been stolen, but her wallet was there. So they were able to identify whose purse it was. But again, it's like if you leave your house, don't you throw your phone in your bag? Maybe she had forgotten it. Who knows? But her other belongings were found in the park the next day and turned in. And of course, that was before the missing persons report had been filed. So at this point, it's just a lost and found item.
I do want to take another second here to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Good Pods. Like I mentioned earlier in the intro, you can see what podcasts your friends and influencers are listening to. This app is great, and the creators and Team Good Pods are very serious about making you the greatest listening experience for a podcast. Not only just the quality of the audio listening piece, but also the social aspect. This is a really awesome app. I can't suggest it enough. I'm very involved in there. They're very dedicated to podcasters, independent podcasters, and listeners. I have a couple groups on there you should go check out. The Indie Podcasters group, Highlight Indie Podcasters, obviously. I've also recently created a True Crime group. I'm a big True Crime fan. You should join both of those groups. And every week, we do pick podcasts out of the Indie Podcasters group to highlight in the recommended section. But once again, I'll say it again, the Good Pods team is a great team of people. I can personally vouch for them, but they're also dedicated to making this app as good as possible. You can talk to them on social media directly. They will respond. They take all recommendations very serious. There's a great team at Good Pods. Make sure you download the Good Pods app and listen to your podcast there. Let's get back to the interview.
Yeah, no, and that's, and you sure as hell wouldn't probably leave your purse behind, right? That's not normal either. That's if you were wanting to disappear per se, if that's an argument even, you would take certain things with you. Maybe not your phone, but your personal belongings, you probably would, right? Because the purse is used for transportation of stuff, not just for fashion or something. But so there was nothing else indicating at her apartment either that she had planned on leaving.
Right. No, none of the evidence points to Lauren voluntarily disappearing, like on her own, wanting to get away or anything like that. Everything points to, unfortunately, some kind of, you know, malicious.
Yeah, vanishing out of nowhere. Yeah, I mean, and probably not on her own. You wouldn't leave your stuff behind. I just want to make sure that people listening need to hear about this. So the next thing that's strange, talk to us about when some of her items and the additional items showed up. That to me was just strange.
Right. Yeah. So probably one of the creepiest findings all throughout this. So like Hillary just mentioned, the day after or whatever, she either disappeared. This is what's definite. She either went missing the late night of the 18th or the early part of the 19th. So, you know, there's like a 12-hour window where she probably disappeared. And like Hillary said, the next day, the 20th, her purse, her wallet, and I mean, the purse with the wallet, the keys, everything, and her, I think they were flip-flops, were found just chilling in the park. So not super unusual to find things of a person that you can't find like the next day in a place where they frequent. But because that's where those things were found, the park became the hotspot for the searches. I mean, that's where, also it's a good gathering place, but that's where everybody would gather. There were so many searches that were held, community searches. The family did their independent searching and they combed through the whole community, but they really went through that park a lot because they knew she had been there. At this point, if you believe it or not, the maintenance man had seen her walking home from that direction. Her stuff was there. So that was like the main focal point of looking for Lauren and where she could have been last. So you have to imagine this park has been combed through inch by inch by everyone for all the days that she's been missing. Well, flash forward 2 weeks later, her sisters, Cassie and Lindsay, and Lindsay's fiance were in the area because they were just driving down to Cape Coral and searching daily, I think, at that point. And they started in the park, combed the park, nothing new. They decided to go, you know, again, searching the community like they had done many, many times before. And one last time before leaving, they were like, let's just check the park one more time. And though it is a big park, from what we understand, there's like a community center in the center that, you know, you're not going to find much there. There's people there all the time, but it was more like searching the little sunbathing beach or, you know, the little nooks and crannies, because everything else is constantly being used by everyone and someone in the community would have seen something. So they went back to this little beach area where they had just been that morning and they had been every day for 2 weeks, and laying on top of the sand, just as Lindsay said, clear as day, was a very distinct lace maroon peplum style tank top that Lauren wore very often. It's also the same shirt that the maintenance man described her to be wearing the last time he saw her. If he did in fact see her that morning, and it was not buried. It was not dirty. It did not look like it had been there. And according to Lindsay, Cassie and Matt, there was no way it had been there any time before that, especially not even that morning. So that kind of freaked them out because, I mean, by any account, that shirt was planted later. Why? Nobody knows. I'm sorry. Hold on. Hillary's got something I don't know what to say. So they had even recently done a news interview with the local news station, Wink News, and set up exactly where the shirt was found. So Paul had been there. Cassie had been there. They had been on the news doing this interview. New crew, camera crews, everything would have been setting up, digging up the area, and the shirt was not there. Yeah. So that was strange because it was just laying atop the sand. Like, of course, it's a public park, so there's security cameras that should be running 24 hours a day and, you know, the usual stuff in a public area. So immediately they called the Cape Coral Police Department and the police responded right away. The evidence team came, the forensics took the shirt. But oddly, at least not reported to the family or to us, unless the Cape Coral police are sitting on something that they don't want to share, which is highly possible because it's an open investigation and they're definitely not saying everything. But they claim that there is no footage of anyone putting the shirt there and that the only footage that they found was in the dark. So it would have obviously been at night. And there's some images of two homeless people that they're describing it as two homeless people kicking the shirt around and like up in the sand. I don't know that, again, the police are strategically releasing whatever they feel can be released. And they're obviously not releasing whatever they need to continue their investigation properly. But it just seems strange that footage is at night, but the three, Cassie, Lindsay, and Matt, were there in broad daylight in the morning and the shirt was not visible. And then they went back in the afternoon and it was. So I don't really understand how that nighttime footage. And also the other question that's really interesting to like ask yourself is if the police could see clearly enough on the nighttime footage that there were two specific homeless people, if they could see that clearly enough, how could they not see more? And also if there's footage, if there is in fact footage of people kicking it up in the sand at night, well then rewind back. There should be footage of someone placing it there, but there isn't, at least not that we know of. So that's the really strange evidence that made everyone kind of think, oh no, this is really bad. Like there's no way she just disappeared because she wanted to get away.
I'm no expert by any means, investigator or anything, but it is common for the police to hold back information. But typically when they do that, right, it's more or less no comment at this time. So for them to, and I don't know exactly what they said, but they're basically saying there's no useful footage.
Yes. And Lauren's sister, Cassie, offered to the detective who's leading the investigation to sit there. She said, I will rewind and watch all the footage from the 18th through the date that we found the shirt. I will sit there and I will watch it. And I will tell you when I see someone putting the shirt there. But she was denied access to the videos to do that. So that's why I wonder, maybe the police do see something and they're building a case. I mean, you hope, mm-hmm. But they also directly told the family, no, we don't see anything. So I don't know. That's the tricky part.
And how close was this to the water?
Yeah, feet. It's like a little sunbathing beach, but it's in a boat basin. So it's not like there's waves crashing up on shore. It's pretty still water because it's within the basin and it's just like a little, almost like a tiny little strip. I mean, the beach itself is tiny, tiny, tiny. It's just, I don't know how to describe it, but like if you're at a park and there's like a little section, almost like the size of maybe a picnic table section, like where a pavilion of picnic tables would be, but it's just sand up against the water. And another thing to note is, like I said, with the shirt wasn't dirty, it wasn't buried, it wasn't all sandy and gross. It also wasn't wet. So it looked, according to the three who found it, it looked fresh and clean and like it had just been dropped.
Was Lauren even known to go swimming there or go there?
Yeah, there.
That's just a basic question, right? Was she known to visit that area frequently?
Yeah, she was really, really spiritual and very into meditation. And she went to that park every morning around the 8 o'clock hour, give or take, and spent at least an hour meditating in the park. And I don't think she had a specific spot in the park she went to. I think she kind of went wherever she felt it. No, she's definitely been sunbathing on that beach. I'm sure she's been swimming. It's not really like a swimming. This is hard to describe without getting too into detail of more of the story.
So she normally wouldn't swim there. It's not like a regular routine of hers, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, she went to a local pool that she would regularly swim at, actually.
Gotcha.
But yeah. I mean, maybe she would dip her toes in. I don't want to say she never touched the water, but she definitely didn't go swimming. Here, Hillary's beckoning for the
moment. Well, no, but that's why we're sort of like skirting around an issue. So just prior to her disappearance, jump in the water, because she was saying people were after her. And it led to a whole situation where she was put in an involuntary mental facility hold. But that's the body of water she had jumped into when exhibiting this erratic behavior. So, you know, your question of, did she go swimming in that water? Well, yeah, it's an active boating way with alligators, and she wasn't supposed to be swimming in there, but yes, she had jumped in the water before.
But not a family hangout swim location by any means, I guess. Okay.
No, I'm pretty sure it's because it's Florida. So there are, and it's an active boating waterway. Gotcha. It's, it's one of those don't swim, you know, caution alligators. She was not known to, you know, collapse there.
Another thing that makes this interesting is the family dynamics and the individuals are less than perfect. Not that any of us are, but the stepfather and the mother weren't exactly very active in the investigative, find, searching, trying to seek information piece.
No, not at all. Nor the boyfriend, right. Even from the very beginning, the boyfriend sort of handed his keys over, said, I'm going to go stay with a friend, never came back except that one time to get his TV, where he made a comment like, well, she's obviously not coming back. And, you know, her father's like, how do you know she's just not pissed off at you? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, what do you mean? So, right. And he never turned up for a search. He told Paul, her father, that he was searching on his own, you know, don't know. And the mother and stepfather, they weren't married. They were together forever. So technically, you know, you could not, but you could call him stepfather. Her mom was, I don't want to say ill, but ill and in a wheelchair. It's kind of self-imposed. She was really struggling with alcoholism. And so she wasn't at all in a position or helpful or anything like that. And, you know, we're trying to reserve judgment on that, because we don't know her struggles. Right. The stepfather showed up to the starts of searches, but then didn't actually search. Yeah, it's strange. And they also, just to put this in perspective, they live right across the street from the park. You know, they were certainly close enough to have gone looking.
Being so close to it, the eyewitness thing really is important, in my opinion. That's just, it's kind of strange, the mix in stories. But regardless, it's strange to just have your purse there. So it didn't look like it had been dumped or gone through or anything. It was just kind of sitting there.
It was just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, no, and that's just fascinating that it would, you know, that's definitely, I see when you used the word planted earlier, definitely would be a huge indicator of that.
Concerning, for sure.
It's just such a crazy story that there's not a, I did try to research it quite a bit as well before. I didn't want to be the guy doing an interview that hadn't even heard of it, but there's just not a great deal of information. And I think the cool thing about your podcast is it really does have most of the information in it, because this isn't a huge thing that's, you can obviously Google anything, but there's not a whole lot more information than what you share on your podcast.
No. And I think we're probably the most comprehensive, since we go back in time and explain what was going on in her life. The media has not let the story go. We did, you know, recently speak with a journalist who's been covering the case for a year. And even she was like, we don't cover cases for a year. People are found here. Like, people are arrested here. Crimes get solved here. This is highly unusual. You know, there's been national media coverage as well. John Walsh's son, Callahan Walsh, launched a new show on Discovery, and Lauren's case was the first case he covered. So that was great for national exposure. Dr. Oz then followed up with Dateline. It's been on Oxygen. So she's gotten the, you know, the national treatment for sure. But again, all of those are limited time. You know, you can only go, you know, the single hardworking mother, you know, goes missing is a great headline, but you can't get too much into the story, unfortunately, in the time allotted on one of those programs because you have other cases you have to cover. This was really more of a deep dive because, you know, it's very easy to like look at the boyfriend, right? I mean, and sure, it's absolutely still possible that he's involved or knows something, but you go back a month and you find out other people she was hanging around, other incidences that happened to her, just, you know, other things that could maybe explain what happened or not. I mean, that's the tricky part about the case since nobody actually knows what happened.
There's also on any of those more national and television programs like Dateline or the People magazine Investigates covered her story too. Like any of those, the show is more limited. Like they can't talk to and interview and feature 9 people in a 20-minute segment. That's too many. And there's no time to introduce those people and get all of the information or whatever it is that they want to share about what's going on. So for us, you know, we have a lot more time. We have episodes that are about 30 minutes a piece. And we have how many episodes do we have? 9?
Seven?
Just kidding. Well, there's 2 coming. So we have not. That's my brain. I'm like, how many do we have? So it's definitely easier for us having one case that we're looking into. And I mean, an unlimited, I mean, we could probably, if information keeps coming, we'll just keep releasing episodes. Whereas those TV shows just have a 20-minute segment with a commercial break that they have to squeeze it all in. So they get the key players. They always get Paul. They always get Cassie. Sometimes they get Lindsay. But they don't have time for, you know, Victor, the private investigator. I don't know. Her friends. Yeah. We also got a lot of information, background information from her friends and a lot of information about the searches and the organizers of the searches and things that information that the searches kind of turned up, not necessarily about Lauren's disappearance, but about the characters Lauren was hanging around with and what she was up to in the area and stuff like that. Like there's no time for those programs to get into all of that, but podcasts, you know, you just keep putting them up. So we have unlimited time to get into all the nitty gritty. So that's what we're trying to do.
And I think we've done, cause you know, there'll be people listening to this that haven't heard of it. And I think what we've done is a really good job of just setting the scene of what happened and then the mystery that we're talking about. I just think it's, I could talk about it all day. It's amazing the work that the both of you did with this. It really is. What does it take from a creative standpoint? You have to have that connection with the person, right? Do you feel like you know her at this point in time or know her way more than you thought you would when you started this journey?
Oh, for sure. We'd never met her. We've never even heard of her. We didn't know who she was.
I realize, but it feels like you've probably just been so involved with it. It probably feels like, you know, a big part of her now.
Oh yeah. 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 And you know, like we said, we are connected to the case through Lindsay, but Lindsay is about 10 years older than Lauren because Lauren is her half sister from her mother's then next marriage. So we had never met Paul. We know Paul very well. We speak to him regularly. We feel like we really got to know Lauren through her family, but also through her friends, you know, so it's, who your family sees you as can often be different than the friend's perspective. So I feel like we got a very well-rounded view of Lauren.
All the investigative piece of that, I think, led to that. And it's just, like I said before, she has a lot of interesting different dynamics to her character and the characters around her. And I mean, it's a real live true story that's definitely worth checking out. Your goal ultimately is to help come to a conclusion and solve this, but how thankful has the family been of both of your help?
They're definitely grateful, and they're grateful for anyone that wants to talk about the case. And that's why they're not shy about putting out some kind of hard to swallow details about Lauren or her past or, you know, where she is now. And ultimately it's just going to, you know, lead, we really hope it'll lead to a resolution, you know, whether we become the next your own backyard. That was our goal. And, you know, and it was also, this was sort of a goal after the fact. So I guess not a goal, but some something interesting. So, you know, Cassie, for example, her sister is really, I mean, she's in it. She's the advocate. She's the closest. And she's also, you know, while she's such a fighter, she's also really suffering. I mean, this is her full sister. They grew up, they're 13 months apart. They've never been apart for this long. And for her to have to rehash every single detail, every single time a new user comes on the Facebook group and is like, wait, what happened? What about this? She can just direct them to our podcast. And she has. And she's like, Complicit, just listen to Complicit. You'll get all the background you need. So it's also a nice thing, that a resource that she and the family and whoever else has, where if you are interested enough in the case to join their Facebook groups or whatever it is, and you know, you're a stranger to the case and you are wanting to know what happened and background and everything, they can just direct them there as research, basically.
How big of an impact do you think this had, being in the middle of COVID, stay-at-home orders, mandatory stay-at-home? I mean, there was a lot of things going on when this all happened.
During COVID, I saw, it was an article in the New York Times that I read, that it's called it was a big boom that Cape Coral had. I think 40% or something, the population increased by. There's a huge billboard. So Cape Coral is only accessible by a bridge from Fort Myers. And there's a huge billboard as you cross that bridge with Lauren's missing poster on it. So as all of these new people are moving to Cape Coral, they see Lauren's face. So again, another product of COVID was people fleeing the north, going to Florida. You have a huge increase in population, people moving. You have more eyeballs on this case.
You guys have both just unlocked this whole creative piece that you probably never even knew that you had, or you didn't know you had it to that extent. When I'm asking you what's next, I don't mean moving on past Lauren, because we don't want to do that, nor will we. But now that you two, Caitlin, Hillary, have unlocked this entirely new creative side of you, do you see more things that you could help out with?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So many different outlets. I mean, again, this is the creative outlet industry is not us. That's not what we are, you know, trained in. No education in this, but no, we're never going to move on from Lauren's case. We will always cover and report all the facts and details of everything related to Lauren's case up until the day that there's some answer. But we definitely are very much enjoying this and will do future seasons on other missing persons cases. I think we're really invested in the missing persons genre. I don't know. Okay. Well, I like it. I don't know. Hillary's like, I want to do anything. But the other thing we talked about was, what if this could be made a movie or a TV show? And obviously we're in no capacity to do that, but yeah, for the audience. And I don't know if that would be appropriate to do before there's an answer, but you know, if somebody wanted to do that, we would gladly sign on to consult or write or whatever, that side of it. Because I do think, as sad as this is to say, because this is real and this is a family and this is a person, it's also, true crime is such a popular genre. And it's, I mean, personally, I know this sounds weird to say, but like, I fall asleep to a true crime show every night. Like I am obsessed mm-hmm. with it. There's a whole Oxygen network filled with Wives with Knives and Snapped and all those shows. And something like that, I think, would be exciting to work on. But again, like, not saying that this isn't sad and serious and a real case. It's just like another outlet to go to, because this is such an interesting and unique story that I just think it would get a lot of attention. And yes, and not everyone listens to podcasts, so getting into other forms would be great. But I don't think that Lauren will be the only story that Complicit does. I think we'll end up with future seasons too.
And it's out of a passion for it, right? I mean, you're not getting rich, so you're doing this because you want to be doing it. I don't want to say enjoy it, because it is missing person, but you know what I mean? You do it because you're trying to make a difference.
Yeah, we're trying to make a difference. We're trying to help, you know, a friend's family, but also we both, I can speak for both of us, we're just so interested in this kind of stuff. Like when we were younger, we watched the movie Clue together.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And we like a mystery.
So moving on past this, and just as I could talk about this all day, like I said, you guys are awesome. And so is the podcast. I don't remember how we exactly came in across paths, but you guys have been kind of growing and meeting a bunch of new creators, a lot of podcasters. So tell me about how cool and important and what you've learned. And have you met some other podcasters that you really enjoy?
Yes. I got very lucky. I looked one day at our, it's called downloads, although I think they're just listens. I'm still learning the lingo. It's Hillary. I looked one day at our numbers because I was, you know, curious of how many people are listening. And I saw a huge jump in our listens one day. And I was like, what happened? You know, the marketer in me was like, okay, what happened? How do we repeat it? And I couldn't figure it out. And I finally, a couple of days later, it was when Apple was starting to do updates, a couple of months ago. And I finally got into the new section on the Apple featured section of new. And I saw us on there and I couldn't believe it. And I said, oh my gosh, I guess I had been affected by the Apple update. And so I couldn't get into it previously. And I was like, oh, that's it. Bingo. That's why we got bigger. And then from the new featured section, we ended up on the Apple charts, which of course is a self-fulfilling prophecy where you keep getting more and more because more people discover you because so many people go looking on those charts for their next listen. When I saw us on the new section of Apple, right under us was a podcast called The Path Went Chilly. And that was an offshoot of, I think it's, they follow up on cases from The Trail Went Cold.
It's a good podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Great podcast. Yes. And I just got bold and tweeted, I took a screenshot and tweeted at The Path Went Chilly and said, great to see you're in excellent company or whatever I said, because I love their show. And then one of the Dr. Jules, who's on the one of three on the show, wrote me back and was, you know, we just started a conversation and she was amazing and so sweet and welcoming. And, you know, this is one of, she has her own podcast called Riddle Me That True Crime. And she said, are you in any RT groups on Twitter? And I'm like, what does RT mean? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so she, I kept saying, I feel like you're my cool older sister that brought me to like sit at the cool kids table at the high school cafeteria. And she just opened the door to all these amazing indie podcasters who, they are all, a lot of them are within a network. We're still not. We are truly independent. Not that they're not either. They're, you know, self-produced and all that. But they, you know, she really was my gateway into other podcasters. And I found a lot more, mostly through social media, actually entirely through social media. And so everyone's just been amazing. We did an interview and then we did a two-part interview on Riddle Me That True Crime with Dr. Jules. And she then followed up with an interview with Paul and Cassie. Lauren's father and sister on a show. The missing persons, Mike Morford, then came knocking and said, hey, this is literally what I do. You want to feature Lauren's case? And we said, yes. And Paul and I went on that show. There are a few more coming up. Yeah. YouTube, actually, also a lot of podcasters also have YouTubes. So yeah. We've been on like Gray Hughes, Paul, and us, we've been on Gray Hughes and Eric Hunley's had some expert forensic experts investigating the case. It's really, and this is where the marketing side comes in because you have a very unknown show with you have a brand new show with an unheard of case, except maybe if you're local. And I've just found that the podcast community, specifically the independent podcasters, obviously, have just been so supportive and want, like rising tides lift all ships kind of thing.
And I'm sure that's how we cross paths along the way. Like I said, I really could talk about this all day. I don't want to keep you guys held up all day, but I do thank you for the support you've shown me as well. And like you said, yeah, it's definitely a great community.
It is. And with your Good Pods work and everything, it's like amazing what you've been doing too, to help and spread the word. And yeah, I mean, I think, we're both probably relatively new to the game and it's just been amazing. There's no, everyone's doing their own thing, right? So it's like, I can easily recommend Complicit in the same breath that I can recommend Riddle Me That or Jury Room or, any of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think, when I wanted to do this podcast, like I just said earlier about highlighting the creators out there, all kinds of creators, and you both are a perfect example of that. And your story and this story of Lauren are just great. Not the circumstances, obviously, of Lauren, right, but great in the sense of what you guys have produced, the artwork, that creative side. And I'm excited for it just so because more people will hear about it. That's going to be huge. So I think you both did great work, and I just wanted to take a minute to commend you for that.
Thank you so much. And for all you're doing too. Thank you.
Anytime. I'm always here, and we will definitely keep in touch. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
Thank you.
Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.